pleasure to talk about something that is a growing need in our community, which is childcare for our new immigrant and refugee families. And it's really interesting because all of what's been discussed on the panel and stuff that I do otherwise and stressful, particularly HIV, so it's nice to talk about kids. And what I'm going to talk about here is the uniqueness of the community that I live in and work in, and it keeps me going. And I'll just preface it with one of the biggest joys of immersing myself in the community is I'm never without a meal. I am a well-fed field researcher. So take note, benefits of the job. The team that I'm representing here today is Dr. Paige Smith, director of the Center for Women's Health and Wellness, Dr. Raleigh Bailey, who recently transitioned out of being director of our Center for New North Carolinians, and Dr. Cynthia Saavedra, our Chicano Latino feminist, she wanted me to say that, who is our expert on BK, or early childhood care and development. So I give them their props. What happened? There we go. Thank you. All right, so some background, national, state, and local awareness. There is awareness that for immigrant communities and families and for immigrants, there is not necessarily wide access to mainstream early child care and literacy education services. And in the community that I live, we have what is known as the Guilford County Partnership for Children, which is coming from a larger state initiative. And they had established a priority area, which is great because as a researcher, you're looking for the agendas that have been established in your community and run along and say, how can I help? So this was a great opportunity. And I have Dr. Paige Smith to thank for that. They had a priority area to begin to try to address the needs of these limited English proficiency and immigrant families, particularly looking at the 0 to 5. Age group. So we had a project. We applied in response to one of their RFPs and developed a project with the community, ethnic community immigrant child care strategy. And here are our goals and objectives. And of course, you start out very ambitiously, but you have some byproducts that, wonderful byproducts that end up coming out of such an initiative. One of the things I'll point you to is this issue and this challenge of looking at real-time culturally responsive services, and you'll understand why a little bit more. And most of all, what we wanted was something that was grounded in the experiences and perceived needs of immigrant families. We went to the source and said, what do you need? What do you perceive is, you know, what would you need to do what you do with your kids successfully in our environment? So, I live in a new gateway community. The South is the new gateway community for our immigrants and refugees. And this is not a New York, this is not a Miami or Texas, San Francisco, this is North Carolina, or as we fondly say, North Carolina. All right, now, I happen to live in Guilford County, the most diverse county in the state. Yay. So, hence I'm well fed. Let me give you some history. Since the 1990s, we had a larger influx than we've ever seen of Mexican immigration. And they're coming from three particular regions in Mexico, central Mexico. In addition, we are a site for refugee resettlement. So, Hmong, we have we're having a whole 400 and something Burmese coming in, which have to be screened 40 to 50 a week over the next few weeks. So we have the largest population of Montagnard refugees who fought with the Vietnam War and were banished to the highlands of Vietnam. We have the largest existing population outside outside of Vietnam. And then just name the conflict or the issue, everyone's there. And with the Iraqi war and so forth, we have more coming in. I mean, it's a hot, it really is an exciting time. Now look at the poor school teachers and everybody else. We have over 74 identified languages spoken in the school system, which means we have an ESOL coordinator for the county. And that's her job, to bring parents, everybody together, researchers, everyone. So it's an exciting place to be sometimes. When we look at the populations that we worked with, we had to make a decision. It was a hard one because communities were saying, why weren't we included? And you know, I just simply said, look how big I am. I can only do so much and no more. And that kind of settled it down. So we decided to make sure communities understand we're starting to continue. But we looked at the African community, and then, you know, you can't just generalize. So we talked, we looked, and we made some decisions. The Liberian community is ever present. They're in a tenure situation because they have a new president, and they may be repatriated or not. So we looked at the Liberian community because at the time all of this was in place, this was the community and the media and so forth. Sudanese, with the Darfur crisis and so we got them on the media. And then we looked at Niger. This is a hidden population. This country is having a tremendous famine, but they're not recognized as refugees. So this is really our hidden population in our community. Everyone's on the, this is our hidden population. And then the Mountain Yard refugees, representing the large Southeast Asian community that we're dealing with, and then the largest is the Latino, primarily Mexican. So, in order to get this project moving, we convened what was called a steering committee. And I'll just preface it by, I've had six, this is my seventh year, living, working, eating, breathing, doing whatever in this community. So I've spent a lot of time immersed in these various communities. I still come out speaking English most of the time, but it is a very diverse community, and it's a lot of, it's a fast learning curve, and there's still more to go. So we had this action-oriented partnership. We had people at the table. And you've already talked about all the spare stigma, and we're talking about children. But if we come out for focus groups, the immigration people be there. And see, we had a mix of refugees and immigrants. So we have the legal status, mixed status, and then this blended household scenario. Will our children be taken away if they were born here? So that's a lot of issues on the table. But what we decided to do was conduct focus group discussions, or focused discussions, with immigrant caregivers, mainly the mothers. We have single fathers, and it turned into a scenario where we could not capture single fathers right away because they were working. All right. So this is war and conflict place role delineation in a different light. So it was really interesting. A lot of Liberian single fathers. So we had trainings. I did a lot of the trainings. We had trainings for all phases and a feedback loop at all phases of the project. We asked a number of questions, but I focused in on who helps you raise your child. It was interesting. We had a dialogue, and we said, is it appropriate to include this so popular saying that we use here? And he said, sure, go ahead, because we want to see, we want to tell you what that really means for us. So I highlight these questions amongst all the other questions. What part of your village, or what parts are missing, are you missing? That was, I mean, for me, that was an intriguing question. And are there new people or places in your village here that you wouldn't have in your home country? They're sort of asking the same question, what's the differences and similarities, but in a way people could talk about, all of us could talk about. So these are our focus groups. We had two of each. And I'll tell you this, here was a byproduct. I'll just jump to the results. People said, wow, we're going to have a discussion. So we said, you know, do the right thing. You want 8 per focus group, no more than 12. Well, the Niger community got all dressed up and they came out. And they said, oh, good, we're going to have someone talk with us. And we said, well, so we had more than several groups coming together and for discussion, because someone was going to listen to us and talk to us about our children. So this is how it panned out. We had two of each, and then when we looked at the total numbers that engaged in a more focused discussion. This was how it panned out. And what I want to present here is just snapshots of the results. And you can read them, and I'll only highlight a few that I think really sort of give us a flavor for what's going on. The one I like is, though we are homesick and dissatisfied to some extent, we choose to stay here because of the children. They must take advantage of the opportunities here. And this is from a Niger mother. So it's, and you can see there's this dynamic going on, and parent, and a lot of people, mainstream people, were saying, that's no different from us. We can't, we have the same angst and so forth. Yes, but there's an additional layer. Because you also have your obligations and your community away from you. Another one, it says here, you can't compare it. It is much better here. And again, if you do not have money, actually get an education. And I'm an immigrant myself. It's interesting. You have a right to an education here. You have a right to get on a school bus. All right? And that, to me, is just fascinating. So it really, people recognize that education is a right in this country. Here you study and you have the opportunity. So they see a delay, regardless of what we say, some linkage to mobility, however small we may put that cap on that mobility. Here's something else. Back home is more safe than here because back home people can keep an eye on your children for you. It's not an encumbrance when they are outside. But here people take your children and do something bad to them. So I'm just highlighting a few of the differences. It costs too much. Parents here from anywhere will tell you that to raise children here in this country compared to our home. You have to buy diapers, formulas, car seats. Why can't you just hold the child? And those things are very expensive that you don't need back home. Okay. We miss the friendliness of neighbors and the assurance that if something happens, you can count on them. In the village, we have sister, brother, grandparents to take care. Here I go to work with a $7 an hour job. I will need support from the government, for example. I don't have my husband here either, or my family. So this is another refugee, a refugee to resettle here. I like this one. The father plays a big role in teaching the kids many valuable things, there's religious responsibilities, duties, cultural obligations. Here, since he's at work most of the time, there's not much contribution to him. So that brings in a concept in our discussion of fathers, because we're worried about not getting, or fathers being demonized, they're not interacting with them. But their roles are responsibility. And of course, we know the usual things, the safety concerns. Once I left my baby girl with a woman, and she was very nice, but one day she had to go to the doctor. She left my daughter with a friend. One of my friends also left her daughter with her. When my friend came back, the baby was crying a lot. And there's all the things, but I left that. They had hit the baby. My friend called me at work, and I left immediately. It was not safe there. The other issue is the biculturalism. I thought it was classic. Having just had Halloween, I thought this sort of set it off. And this is an adaptive strategy. And I thought, when we look, this idea of the dual language culture. So, you know, parents are in this dilemma. It's the children must know English, but they want them to know the home culture. It stresses the parents because they have to teach or tutor them at home and homework in one language, but try to portray the honorability of their own language and culture. The usual program and service needs. One issue was access, mostly. When you start talking about transportation, language, time, cost, hours, cultural staff availability. And this is a model that I have been working with on anything that I'm doing dealing with immigrant and refugees, and I just plug this into that circle of challenges, I call it. So this is my circle of challenges, and whatever I'm dealing with, I talk about this availability, utilization, and access. And you can see how that works. And then the women's role, family structure issues, another area we're going to go and explore some more as it came up. I love this. It is like we are caught up in a circle. We want to stay home and raise our children the best way possible, but then we come completely dependent on the husband because they need to bring the money. If we get a job, then we are no longer home to raise the children, and half of the income goes to pay for daycare. Who doesn't have this complaint? And not to say that it's the same, but this is a great starting point to bring mainstream mothers and immigrant mothers into a room to begin a discussion. Lessons learned. There is agency in the parental voices. They said, we can help these people think about how to fix some of these things. And they have highlighted once again the complexity of the U.S. work and family life, especially for immigrant women. A lot of culture brokering and a lot of community expectations now raised when you do research. The minute you walk in, oh, you start asking questions. You better be ready for the what next. And so you can't stop here because you began to raise the expectations of, so what are you going to do? Or how can we work with you to do something additional? Or what about our model? I wanted to end with this. This is what they said, or one person said. We think if immigrant parents can get information about the services and where they can learn English and learn to use the many things, such as computers, if we can have daycares where our children will feel like home, the environment, the food, maybe our hire a woman that can understand the immigrant's parents' language that would help to understand the children's needs and habits. It is more important. We need daycare that we can afford to pay for. It is not easy to pay hundreds of dollars for that daycare when we only make half of that money for living. Thank you. And of course, my collaborators, just to acknowledge them. And that's it.